Before we start this week's episode, we'd like to remind you folks that the Air Raid podcast is available at many places, including the Stitcher Radio app for your mobile device, iTunes, our website air-raid.net, and of course at www.cairoradio.com. Hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 263 in what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Boom, indeed. Boom, indeed. The requisite morning buzz show intro, right? We've got a great show planned for you this week. Oh, man. Chris Kirkwood of the band, bass player of the band The Meat Puppets, will be joining us here shortly. I had the pleasure of joining him in his hotel room, and we just had a fantastic chat. Man, and gets a little heavy. Not gonna mince words here at the top of the show. Gets a little heavy. We have a very frank and candid conversation about, well, amongst other things, we talk about how Kurt Cobain invited them, the Meat Puppets, on stage at MTV Unplugged, much to the chagrin of the MTV producers. And then we talk about some heavier stuff, like being addicted to dope and getting in a fight with a security guard, getting shot in the back as a result of that fight, and he still lives today with a bullet in his spine. Yeah, man. Yeah. Wow. Okay. So, good stuff. Good stuff coming up with Chris Kirkwood. Wonderful, wonderful human. He's cleaned up. He's good. And they're still playing music, man, which is fantastic. And they're still touring around and doing their thing. So I applaud them for that. So, great conversation with Chris Kirkwood coming right up. But before we do that, we're going to be talking with Thomas Bridgman, alumni of this here podcast. He was on a little while ago. And let's see. We're going to call him up and talk to him about this show that he's doing. He's good, taking it on the road on a little West Coast tour. So let's chat with Thomas Bridgman here for a moment.
How's life down in San Francisco, man?
Life down here is great because this is Shangri-La. This is the dream that we all have.
San Francisco is the dream? Are you sure?
Well, it's a type of dream for sure. I'm just thinking in terms of my transition from being a Seattle person who just accepted that there are months of misery in everyone's lives,
right,
in terms of the weather and the amount of sunlight, and then you come down here and you're like, oh no, there's liberal politics and good food and and water whenever you want to go down to the edge of it, water you can't swim in.
Right. Yes.
And yet it's also above 60 degrees all year long. So.
And foggy.
It's foggy. Okay, yeah. Fair enough. All you got to do is cross the bay. You go to the East Bay and zero fog. You're good.
Right, right. But how's the comedy scene been treating you down there?
The comedy scene is great here. I love it. There's a tremendous amount of talent. There are tons of venues, and there's lots of people with money to burn. So, it's pretty darn good. And there's I'd say three or four like real major clubs, and then a million
different spots
under the radar.
Do like open mics and work on your craft.
Exactly.
That's good, man. That's good. So you're enjoying yourself down there.
I love it here.
Yeah?
Absolutely adore it. Yeah.
Excellent. Excellent, man. Well, it's good to have you back on the show again, if it's, you know, if not for such a brief brief moment. But when were you on the show? It was, what, like 2 years ago?
It was 2 years ago, I think, yeah, and it was around sort of Christmas time. I think that was, or maybe Thanksgiving.
Okay, and you came here to the backyard, right?
Yeah, uh-huh.
And it was just before you left, our fair city of Seattle to move down to California.
It was, no, you and I were going to try and talk before I left. It didn't work out, so I'd been down here for, you know, I think 6 months at the point that we did that. So I had some perspective of the scene here. It took me a little while to break into it, but yeah.
Okay. I'm remembering now. Which makes me sound like just an awful host of this show.
Oh, like just the worst. You're the worst.
So what's going on, man? You contacted me a couple of days ago. You said, "Hey, I'm coming back up to Seattle. We're doing this thing, and we want to promote it." So let's hear it, dude. What's going on?
So I have, I've given birth.
You've given birth.
I've given very painful laborious birth to a comedy show whose format I think is kind of unique and really beneficial to laughers, you know, big laughers.
Yeah,
who like to have a good time, and to comedians as well. Because I'll tell you the format.
Okay.
And you'll understand why this is just a good thing for everybody. So the show is called Bubblegum Garbage Party.
Yeah, and I'm intrigued.
Right off the bat. That's my seller. That's my hot seller.
Right.
And my closer.
Right.
I open and close with the name, and people their pupils dilate like in Requiem for a Dream. They're just like, oh, those words sound good. So I have stand-up comedians on, and then sometimes I have very special musicians on. And I start every segment with an interview, kind of silly. I mix it up with serious questions so we get to know the person. And also just ridiculous hypothetical questions to sort of draw out things. I'll get them to expand on a story that I've heard them tell.
That's sure.
Basically, a talk show like that sort of.
Yeah. So you're stealing. What you're saying is you're stealing my format.
I'm trying. You keep calling the cops, and it keeps getting taken away from me. So then I say, you want to tell some jokes, and then they say yes. And then they start doing their set because they're stand-ups, and that's what they do. It's all they know. They're actually broken human beings. They can't do much else. and then in the middle of their set, I interrupt in a character that I somehow can link to something they've said during their interview or in their stand-up.
So it's a bit of stand-up, a bit of improv.
Exactly. So yeah. So
wow.
So then I force them to do improv. I force stand-ups to improvise.
Okay.
That's like forcing a mother to kill her child. It's not easy to do.
Right.
And they tend to do a great job, unless they buck against it. Like every now and then, it's like trying to force water through plastic. You just can't get a stand-up to do improv. But at that point, it's still fun because I just get to tear into them in character. I just get to belittle them for being such cowards.
Well, it sounds like, you sound very happy with this project, and that makes me happy. And I love you. And when can we see this? When is it coming up to Seattle?
Okay, so the first show is in Seattle on Thursday, September 3rd. This is the week before the big bumper shoot blowout. But
right.
It's not a bumper shoot night, so we should be solid.
Okay, okay.
So Thursday, September 3rd at Gallery 1412.
Yeah.
I think it's an 8 p.m. show, wheelchair accessible, all that sort of thing. It's going to be incredible, considering the guests that I have. I have Henry Russell Stoddard. I have a comedian. He's a comedian. I have comedian David Zoe Leon.
Yeah, yeah.
originally from Wisconsin as a Seattle import, and he's
excellent,
incredibly funny and bizarre and wonderful, and he's just going to destroy. I've also got Jake Snyder, the singer and guitar player from Minus the Bear.
Oh, cool.
Who's going to do this thing I do on my show where I have a musician on, and I, in character, I sort of pretend to be working on a new song in front of an audience, and the musician will just start playing something I've never heard before, and utilizing my large toolkit, including my former musical career,
right.
I'll improvise a song in character and make up the lyrics. They usually, if I'm on my game, they reference topics that have come up as the show's been going on.
Awesome,
and
man.
It's fun and crazy.
That's great.
And the cherry on top of the show is that we have headliner Derek Sheen.
Oh,
who, as we
man,
all know,
I love that guy.
He's a national treasure.
Yeah, that's going to be a great show, man. That sounds really cool. Now, are you taking this on tour? Are you going to any other cities as well?
Yes, of course.
Yeah?
I have a full-on tour in the sense that four shows makes a full-on tour. we're doing Olympia, Washington the next night, Friday, September 4th. On Saturday, September 5th, we're doing Portland.
Okay.
We're going to be playing the upstairs nook of the Bossa Nova Ballroom, the Black Barrel Social Club. And then we're going to end this whole shebang back home in San Francisco at Lost Weekend Videos Cine Cave on Monday, on Labor Day, September 7th.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy. We've got George Chen. We've got Tim Evans. And then we've got my San Francisco comedy crew. It's a crew of incredibly talented people who are just under the radar, and I hope that this show gives them the exposure that they deserve.
Wonderful, man. Well, where can we find out more about this stuff?
So,
you guys have a website. I know that you kind of do this radio show now too. Is that part of this?
This show is a radio show here in SF. It's also a podcast on MutinyRadio.fm.
Okay.
That's its home.
On the web
station, basically, but it's a live performance space in the Mission at 21st in Florida.
Okay.
Mutiny Radio. So you can find information at mutinyradio.fm about the show, and there's archives of old shows there. You can listen live on Thursday nights from 8 to 10 at mutinyradio.fm.
Awesome.
And then
awesome.
I've got a Tumblr page, which is bubblegumgarbagepartytumblr.com. You can follow us on Twitter. You'd have to follow me. It's at Thomas Bridgman. There's no E in Bridgman, but the way you'll know is that my parenthetical name is Feather Daddy. So that's a pretty easy one to remember.
Yeah, totally. Well, Thomas, hey man, it's fantastic to talk with you again, and I hope that these shows go great. It sounds like you're very enthusiastic about it, and that makes me very happy, sir.
Awesome, Aaron. Thank you so much. This means the world to me. You're the greatest dude. And I got to tell you, this show means the world to me. It's the best thing I've done in comedy ever, and I'm really, really proud of it.
Oh, that's great, dude. That's great. And thank you so much for the kind words. That's awesome.
Oh, man. So I'm running your promos every single show from now on, brother.
Good.
All right. Yeah. You have a good night, man. Thank you so much.
You too. And we'll put this stuff up in the show blog so you guys can find it there as well at www.air-raid.net. Thanks a lot, Thomas.
God bless you. Thanks, man.
We'll see you soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye. All right. Thomas Bridgman, everybody. And those dates, once again, for Bubblegum Garbage Party coming up in September. Seattle, Thursday, September 3rd at Gallery 1412. Olympia, Friday, September 4th. Olympia, Washington, that is. Portland, Oregon, Saturday, September 5th. And San Francisco on Monday, September 7th at the Lost Weekend Video. Okay? All right, and we'll have a link, hopefully, to that in the blog, once again, at air-raid.net. So go and click on that, find your tickets there. Okay, let's get into it, shall we? Let's see, featuring music today from the Meat Puppets, before we get into this conversation with Chris, the bass player from the band. There you go, Chris Kirkwood. This song's called Backwater.
It's off of Too High to Die, their 1994 release. And we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. Stay with us. There's a blood that's flowing through the feeling, with a knife to open up the sky's veins. Some things will never change. They stand there looking backwards, half unconscious from the pain. They may seem rearranged in the backwater swirling. Something that'll never change. And when I should have been done a long time, it laughs and says I find ways. Just when we're sheltered under paper, the rockets come at us sideways. Something will never change. They stand there looking backwards, half unconscious from the pain. They may seem rearranged in the backwater swirling. There is something that'll never change. And hey, I'm buying good fight, roll from time on who's done. Face. There's a blood that's flowing through the ceiling, with a knife to open up the sky's veins. Some things will never change. They just stand there looking backwards, half unconscious from the pain. They may seem rearranged in the backwater swirling. There is something that'll never change. Some things will never change. They stand there looking backwards, half unconscious from the pain. They may seem rearranged.
Only one button I can press, right? You're old hat at this now. You do your own show.
I do. I do my own show.
Do you do the technical stuff behind
it? No, not at all. I've actually recorded them at a studio in Los Angeles.
Oh, really?
And it's all been out of my hands, the technical side of stuff. And I was actually talked into doing the show by a friend of mine, Bill Cody, who's producing the show as well. You know, so,
oh, yeah.
And he's co-hosting it with me.
Isn't Bill Cody's like a radio guy, right?
He's a film guy more. No, he's not.
Oh,
like
okay.
He's not like a known radio
Maybe I'm
guy.
Thinking of like a Wayne Cody or something like that.
Yeah,
maybe
no,
that
it's, not, it's not that, no. He actually made, he's a film guy. He made that movie, what's it called? The Athens, Georgia movie. Fucking
Athens, Georgia movie.
Yeah, Athens Inside Out, I think it's
Oh,
called.
Okay. Okay, yeah.
A while back, you know,
yeah.
But it's gone down to be like a beloved flick.
Right.
Bill made that.
Yeah, right on, man. So what's the name of the show?
The Chris Kirkwood Podcast.
There you go.
I came up with that myself.
Genius.
It's got a certain ring to it.
Yeah, yeah. Chris Kirkwood, of course, from the Meat Puppets. Original founding member of the band.
Yes, indeed.
Right?
Yes,
bass
indeed.
Player.
Yep.
How long has Meat Puppets been around?
We started playing together, the three of us. My brother Kurt, Derek Bostrom on drums, and like the end of 79.
Really?
Yeah, and we were calling it Meat Puppets by, you know, early part of 1980.
Yeah, yeah, so. Right. And how did, I had read something somewhere that, like, you initially started playing music by playing the banjo because you saw it played in the movie Deliverance. Is that true?
That is true.
Really?
Yes.
Well, it's got to be one of the only people that have ever, like, watched that movie and been like, you know what? I really want to play banjo.
I don't know. I think that movie probably, like, sparked a banjo revolution in a way. I mean, if it got to me, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that song is pretty unforgettable.
Yeah.
Right?
You know? And the song is actually called Dueling Banjo. We're referring to, of course, the scene in Deliverance where it's Ronnie Cox. And I don't know the kid that was playing banjo. I don't know his name. But Ronnie Cox suddenly realizes that there's a kid with a banjo and he's got his guitar and they start playing that song. And we'd gone to see the movie Deliverance. Yeah, we'd actually gone to see the movie Clockwork Orange because my brother had been assigned the book, I believe, by Anthony Burgess of Clockwork Orange in school. And then the film came out, the Stanley Kubrick, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Wonder piece. And I think he was assigned to go and see that for a class or something. So Mom took us in. It was a double header, and the other film playing was Deliverance.
Yeah.
And I was like 13, I think, probably something like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, the banjo
sequence. How'd your mom like a Clockwork Orange?
She loved it, I'm
sure. Sitting there with her two teenage boys.
Yeah. I'm sure. Went over like gangbusters. As, you know, it's school. She liked schoolish type stuff for us to be, you know, bookish and whatnot. Yeah, yeah, so it was like an assignment. Uh-huh. You know, so.
Yeah. So, so where did you go from there? From banjo to guitar?
Mom had us take like guitar lessons when we were kids, music lessons. You know, I had some guitar lessons as a younger kid. I didn't really like it, you know, didn't catch my interest. Then I had some piano lessons that also didn't really stick. Then, you know, I got into the banjo and actually took some lessons with that for a while. And that turned me on to playing, you know, made me realize that I enjoyed, you know, playing. So then when I was about 15, I started thinking basses look cool. You know, I'd gotten into some different kinds of music, started listening to some different kinds of stuff, and thought, you know, since I was playing the 5-string banjo and the bass only had 4 strings, they're thicker, they're further apart. You know what I mean? It just seemed like an end up. Plus, you kind of pick with your right hand on the banjo. That's the 3-fingered picking style, so or your thumb and 2 fingers. And I went from that. I figured that, you know, maybe it'd be kind of an easy switch over to the bass, playing it with my fingers. And I just thought they looked cool and wound up getting myself a bass when I was about 15.
Yeah, yeah. So. That's kind of a daunting task, too, when you're that young. I mean, the bass strings tear your fingers apart.
Yeah, for a minute. Yeah. You know? I mean, you know, the round wound ones do, you know. There's the flat round one wound that don't.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, and you know. But, you know, you're young, so you heal quickly.
Right.
And this damn thing still tear my fingers apart. I got a sore finger from last night.
Oh, man. So was music a big thing in your family then?
No, not really. I mean, it was just like, you know, the music lessons and that kind of stuff was, I think, mom just, you know, the kind of things that moms do with their kids.
Right,
you know?
Right.
But
your brother Kurt was kind of forced into lessons as well. The same time you were, and must have been just something that your parents wanted to have you guys do, like an extracurricular activity or something.
And Kurt kind of took to it. Kurt took to it more than I did when we were younger. So he'd been playing guitar for a while, and I came along later. But no, it wasn't a music. We weren't from a musical family. You know, mom would play a few songs on the piano and had a handful of songs that were like from her childhood and stuff.
Uh-huh.
You know,
and
we wound up covering Tumble and Tumbleweeds on our first album, and that's one that mom used to sing.
So, really?
You know, with us and stuff.
That's cool, man.
But it wasn't like a musical family at all.
Right.
Know, just
right.
You know, just dribs and drabs here and there. But
yeah.
No musicians in the family.
We
were the first to do that.
So how did you kind of leave that and start getting into bands? Was that kind of a high school thing as well?
Playing with people was a high school thing. I didn't really get into bands. Kurt was in bands. Kurt actually took, you know, guitar seriously enough to join some bands.
Uh-huh.
He was in a couple of different cover bands and stuff when, you know, in the mid-70s, did that kind of stuff. And I used the bass. I kind of, you know, played with my friends some. But the first band I was actually in was the Meat Puppets, you know.
Really?
Yeah, actual. Kurt and I had a tiny little experiment that actually gigged with another friend. This project called EYE,
uh-huh.
You know, and this other friend of ours in Phoenix and a couple of guys. And we played a party with that band. So that
How'd that go?
It was fun. It was very fun.
Yeah. Do you remember your first time getting up in front of people and playing?
That was one of the first.
That was it?
That was one of the first in terms of, like, you know, actually, you know, doing a gig kind of a thing. I mean, it was a party, you know, at a guy's house. So, but still, it was like, you know, getting up and playing in front of people.
Were you nervous at all?
I might
those
have
first
been
times?
Had it not been for the, you know, high amounts of sedatives I was on at the time. It was the 70s. I was probably on Quaaludes.
So it got into those a little early then, huh?
You know, it was the 70s.
Right, right.
Some people did back then.
When did it lock in for you though? When did it,
like, right around then, you know, in my late teens, you know, in my late teens, there was
like, this is what I want
to
do.
Yeah. You know, at least, you know, to the degree that I wanted to, and I knew I got a kick out of it. You know, I enjoyed playing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I took it fairly seriously. I didn't like that serious, but I mean, I had a knack for it. The bass came to me fairly easily.
Sure.
It's not that complicated of an instrument in the first place, depending upon what you're trying to do with it, you know? So,
right, right.
As far as like rock and stuff like that, I realized, you know, most of this stuff's real simple in a way, you know, on the bass. And, so I kind of got to a fun place with it easily enough.
Yeah.
So, that I was, you know, into doing it. And then, in my late teens there, somewhere around, you know, 18, 19 in there, you know, started to just play with Kurt a little tiny bit, actually.
Uh-huh.
Played with Kurt some, you know, me and my brother played together some. And then through a mutual friend, we met Derek Bostrom, our first drummer, you know,
right.
The guy we started the band with.
And you guys at this time were kind of playing hardcore music, right?
No.
Punk?
I mean, we were playing, whatever whatever the fuck you play when you first started playing, you know?
Yeah, covers and, of things. And
some
yeah,
covers and stuff yeah. like that. And Kurt and I would just jam on certain things, you know? And then when we met Derek, that kind of led to, you know, the realization. Derek was into some stuff that we weren't into. We were into some stuff that he wasn't into musically. And
yeah.
Kind of got turned on to, like, the 7-inch punk rock scene that had been happening in the late 70s for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Derek had a cool collection of stuff. And we found those songs to be real easy to learn and play and a fun outlet. So initially we started out, like, learning all this punk rock stuff that we really liked, like the whole Damned album, stuff like that.
Right,
the first
right.
Damned album, stuff like that, you know. And Derek sang a lot of that stuff. And, you know, we started, you know, and we would sing some stuff too. And a variety of other things too, you know, other covers and stuff that even back then kind of bespoke the kind of band that we would become or whatever. It's just what we thought of music. And
sure.
And we did I remember doing like Dixie Fried by Carl Perkins back then, you know, so just certain things, you know, so
yeah,
we were,
yeah. We a healthy mix.
Yeah. Very, you know, yeah. a wide variety of stuff in a way. And yet it kind of focused down into what was known, you know, you'd call it punk rock, but I mean, we were never really like a punk rock band, you know, we never dressed up like punk rockers or whatever, you know,
sure.
anything like that. And
yeah,
once we got around to writing our own stuff, it had its own, it was just what it was, you know, and we screamed our asses off on like the first, a lot of that early material, our vocal take was like, try to make your eyeballs explode by
right.
screaming.
So how far into it were you guys when you were picked up by SST?
That, let's see, that would have been, well, they put out our first album. They put out our first 12-inch. So, and I think that came out in like late 81, maybe.
Okay. So something you guys like have been a band for about a year?
A couple of years.
Yeah.
A couple
yeah.
of years. And we put out a 7-inch and we'd already, you know, done a bunch of shows and stuff. And, gotten out to Los Angeles and started to meet people out there.
Right.
We met Black Flag. They played. They came through Phoenix, and we opened for them. So
was that a trip?
A trip?
Yeah. I mean, it was. You
opening
know,
for Black Flag.
I mean, Black Flag wasn't like what they are today of what people think of them, but like, I mean, they had a pretty healthy following back then.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
underground following.
And there was kind of a cool, you know, there was a cool punk rock underground scene that was happening, you know,
sure.
in the country at that point. So Phoenix kind of had its own little trippy little scene that was going on.
Yeah.
And we were, you know, we played shows in town and,
but it must've been kind of cool. Like
for guys like that. And
getting to open up for a band like that.
That was fine.
Yeah.
It was fine. Yeah. It was totally fine. I'd seen him before. I saw Black Flag play before that.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it was like a gig, you know, it wasn't like, you know,
sure.
It was more like a gig, you know. Back then, I mean, we were already full of ourselves completely and entirely, so it was just like pish posh. They were closing for us.
Uh-huh.
So we put, you know, we met them then, and
yeah.
then they had us come out to Los Angeles, and they liked us, you know, as a band uh-huh. and stuff, and asked us to come out and play with them out in Los Angeles. And I think it might have been Henry's first gig out in LA. It was at the Cuckoo's Nest, and I think Watt, I'd gotten to know Watt, or maybe Watt had seen us or something.
Mike Watt?
Yeah, and Mike was already, you know, in with those guys, and I think mm-hmm. he told them, you know, Mike says that he told those guys that they should put out a record by us. So
yeah,
but it went down somewhere in there, and we already had a 7-inch out. The 7-inch had already come out before that, and that was put out by some people out in Van Nuys, a band called Monitor in the LA area.
Yeah. And now, was that exciting for you though? I mean, this is, you know, some, I mean, especially back in the day, like getting signed to a label was kind of a big deal.
Well, this, you know, yeah, it was exciting. I'll tell you how the signing to this label went down. I mean,
okay.
you know, it was so big time. They called their record label World Imitation. and and they had started the label so they could put out a record of their own. The band was called Monitor, and their album's recently been reissued. And
right.
It's a really cool record. So the way we wound up getting some stuff recorded to release that they could release was they had a song on their album called Hair that they wanted done fast and loud-ish, you know, screamy style. Like they wanted us to do it.
Right?
It was a song they'd written, and they wanted us to play it. And they were going to have it be on their album. So we said we'd do that. You know, we'd gotten to know them. They're pals of ours. And we went into the studio and recorded that because they were a little more cerebrally kind of maybe. You know, they had keyboards and they were a little, you know, they weren't like screechy like we were back then, you know.
Yeah.
Just a different sounding band. So we recorded their song for them, and then they said, why don't you record some of your own stuff while you're in here? So we whipped out the five songs that became that 7-inch. And then they you know, had already figured out how to go about getting, you know, records printed at least, you know, to a certain level.
Right.
They wanted to release it on their World Imitation Records. So we were cool with that. So they drew up a contract, and the contract, this is how arty this shit was there was two clauses. The first clause is whatever the Meat Puppets say is what goes, you know? You know what I mean?
That's
clause number one. Clause number two said, if there's ever any dispute, see clause number one.
What? Really?
And then we signed it in blood.
Shut the fuck up. Did you really?
Yeah. I was like, you know.
Did you actually, like, sign your name in blood on this contract? Or did you just put, like a fingerprint or something like that?
Picking up a scab, you know?
Yeah.
Getting close to it. We were just kidding, you know? It was a bunch of freaks. Those people were really cool. They were a really cool band.
That's great, man. I mean, shit, my podcasting contract has more clauses than I can count.
Right. Yeah, so, you know, I mean, back then it was a long ways from, like, you know, getting signed, you know?
Yeah.
You see bands getting signed. And, I mean, and you know, punk rock in a large way was a reaction against the way that
you know,
things had gotten, you know, obviously. And
So
it wasn't like, you know, we were holding our breath to, you know, get on a label, and we weren't really trying that hard to get something made, but we weren't trying to not as well. And
yeah,
it was all kind of serendipitous the way things kind of just came to us, you know.
I mean, I always kind of think, like, you know, back to the punk scene, it was, you know, the real punk scene was well before I was born, but I would always imagine that most of that was just, you know, the whole view of things and being the anti of this, anti of that. Like, secretly, you want your art to be heard, though, right?
Well, I mean, it's, I was never, like, I was, you know, the punk thing had that anti thing to it, you know?
Right.
And, you know, but it wasn't like anything I clung to that heavily.
Uh-huh.
You know, I really liked the playing side of it as much as anything.
Sure.
And, no, I clearly remember thinking, God, why should we bother recording this crap? You know what I mean? That's the point. Who could possibly give a fuck, you know?
Uh-huh.
And, you know, so, but we've never been, like, against people listening to our crap, and we've never been reactionary or whatever, revolutionary either, you know?
Yeah,
we're not, like, going, oh, poo-poo on them, you know, because of the way that they do things. We do things the way that we like to do it.
Sure.
And do what we want to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just happened to be this little punk scene going on that allowed us to, you know, play shows, wide variety of stuff. You know, there's just kind of a big umbrella that, you know, was kind of like punk at that point, you know? And, that's more how it was for us.
Yeah. And how did you guys get along? I mean, you're touring with your brother.
Yeah, we get along fine.
Yeah?
We get along fine, sure.
Like, even back in the day, like everything everything was copacetic?
Yeah, mostly. You know, mostly. I mean, we were brothers. We'd quarrel at times. And occasionally have little minor tiffs, but neither of us are that big of bruises or anything, you know? So, and never, you know, we never wailed on each other or anything like that, you know?
Right.
But
right.
I mean, stuff would come up for sure. But, you know, overall, it was a pretty smooth thing, you know.
It takes a special kind of person, special kind of sibling bond for that to take place.
Yeah.
Well, I would imagine me and my brother, it wouldn't work out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it worked out just because the three of us playing together was its own unique thing.
Right.
You know, because a lot of our pals played. So there was all these different little versions, you know, people jamming together and this kind of stuff. But the three of us just happened to be something that was particularly, you know, satisfying. So rather than it be like these brothers going, you know, let's start a band together, it was way more like, you know, I fit in, you know, in a way that
he
fit in. And, you know, so it was we never sat around as kids at all, you know. We're like, you know, I want to be a rock star, you know. It just wasn't like a thing. And Kurt and I, you know, didn't play together that much until, you know, like I said, until kind of like my later teens. And, you know, so it worked out just because we all three wanted to do it, you know, and we liked the way, you know, it felt doing it and the sound we got and everything. So, but, you know, we got along all right.
So that's good, man. That's good.
And now we have my brother's son playing with us, so it's even more of a family affair.
Right, right. You
know, my brother's kid, Elmo, is playing guitar with us now.
Uh-huh.
So, and has been for a few years. And Derek's not with us anymore, you know. Derek is out of the picture.
Uh-huh.
Band-wise, and Shannon Sum is our drummer now, so.
Right, you know, right. Do you like this, the latest iteration?
Yeah, it's a blast.
Yeah,
it's real fun. And the four-piece is real, real interesting. Elmo's a real good guitar player. Got into it on his own and just a hell of a good guitar player. And
yeah.
And there's something there just genetically that works, you know. It's just like, I mean, it's kind of like...
Passed down from father to son, man.
I guess, you know. And it's just, I mean, it's just the way we're put together. So there's a kind of a, you know, this family sound or something somewhat, you know. And I think that's what the... kind of what the band was initially anyways, you know, just the way Kurt and I kind of went after the guitars.
Right. When did you guys kind of switch it up from really, you know, screaming into the mics, being more of a punk sound to, you know, what your sound is now?
I think it was always there, you know. I mean, it was just had to do with the songs, you know. If you listen to it, you can follow the progression on the records in a way. You can see
it kind of evolves, right?
What we wanted to do on what particular point recording wise, you know. And we were still like, you know, touching on things that we were going to be touching on throughout our fucking time playing together, as it turns out, you know. And the ideas were there, but you know, from album to album, we were trying to get to different things, and the transition, I mean, people made note of it back at the time and whatnot, but it wasn't that big of a deal to us. From Meat Puppets 1 to Meat Puppets 2, you know, we purposely decided to, you know, try out some different stuff and had a different batch of songs that we were doing. And
yeah,
it's still kind of screamy, but they're not quite as, like, screamy as the first album was, you know. And it was never like punk rock screaming. It's all been about trying to chase this particular, you know, artistic ideal or what the fuck ever,
right,
trying to get ourselves off, trying to just, you know, play a little bit of music, you know. So so the second one's got, you know, there's some squealy kind of vocals and whatnot on there, but you know, started to, you know, show a different side of ourselves somewhat. But like I said, it wasn't that different side of that much of a different side to us, you know. Other people going, well, look at the change that's taking place in the band or whatever, you know. And it's just like, no, I mean, the band's always been like that. We're just now showing you, it's like a pizza, you know, here's a different slice, you know.
Sure.
Kind of a thing. So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and by that time, too, by Meat Puppets 2, you guys have been touring for years time as well, right?
For a while, yeah. Yeah, we've done some touring by that point, definitely.
Yeah, and I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but that was around the time when, you know, people like, or that may have been the album that influenced a lot of other notable musicians as well.
Apparently, you know, I mean, I hear that. I never hear it musically, but I think the whole SST thing did, you know, that
sure.
It was before it became you know, big time in any way. It was before they called it alternative even, you know. There was an actual little independent movement that took place, you know, that it was like the second or third wave of punk rock by that point, as it was, you know.
Yeah.
The one that, whatever one we were a part of was still like, you know, downtrodden enough or something, you know. I mean, it was really done for its own sake, you know, largely. So that wound up being inspirational to, you know, a handful of other folks, apparently.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, the SST stuff is looked on well, you know, a lot of the bands from there.
Yeah,
you know?
Definitely. Definitely.
And in hindsight or retrospect, you know, you can see that it's like, this is just a cool time artistically, you know, just circumstances align themselves so that, you know, you had these bands that were kind of from these different little, you know, areas around the country that all
that were finding out about your stuff or going to see shows
on
tour
label,
and stuff.
You know, just
label,
you know what I mean? Like us, Husker Du, you know, Minuteman, Flag themselves, you know.
Yeah.
Just, and then, yeah, and then, you know, there would be people at the shows back then. And it just turns out that, like, the next wave or whatever, the next generation of musicians that came along, you know, cite us and some of our contemporaries as, you know, being influential, just like we cite other people as being influential to us. And then it just happened to blow up, you know.
Right.
But then it'd gotten, like, you know, I guess, I don't know. I mean, it'd gotten, like, understandable enough or whatever the fuck, or these bands were just good, you know, and they, they'd gotten crystallized down or whatever, you know, it had like gotten to the point where there was a tolerable version of punk rock, or a punk rock that could actually still kind of be called, considered punk rocky or whatever, you know, and then,
right.
you know, got start getting called alternative and whatnot, and that that people dug, you know.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. Was it an honor at all to hear that bands like Nirvana and Pavement were citing you as a big influence?
Oh, it's such an honor. You wouldn't believe it. I'm, you know, that's all I can do to keep my hands off my dick right now. And, you know, I'm so fucking honored.
Yeah. I'm sensing some sarcasm right there.
No, I mean, it's fine. It's totally fine. Yeah, yeah. You know, yeah. It's totally fine.
I mean, well, these were your contemporaries, too. I mean, your friends and
somewhat.
Stuff like that.
I mean, they weren't, you know, I didn't know those people. You know, I didn't know them, you know. When they were first coming up or whatever, but then, you know, wound up, you know, doing the TV show with those guys, got to know them somewhat, and still see, you know, some of the, you know, Chris and Dave occasionally. But, you know, I mean, it's kind of like, I don't know, you know, it's nice enough. People say stuff about you. Like I said, you want people to hear your art. So there's a side of you that's like, ooh, look at my name in print. You know what I mean?
Right.
So you know, do I have an ego? Yeah. You know, do I care? No.
Yeah.
You know, do I do art because life's a fucking joke? Yes. You know, and ultimately, does it matter? Fuck doodly to me? No. I'm more concerned with what the tree's opinion.
Right.
And I'm not, you know what I mean? I mean, there's just different ways of looking at it. So, yeah, it's fine. People, you know, people did that kind of stuff and whatnot. I'd have rather been fucking, I'd have way rather been like, uninfluential and fucking really, really popular in hindsight.
Well, let's do this. Let's go to our second musical break. And when we get back, we'll be talking more with Chris of the band The Meat Puppets. Stay with us. Oh, yeah, we've got the same shoes on. Yeah, but yours look much nicer. I've got the holes going and, you know, things falling off.
I just got these. These are brand new.
Yeah. Isn't it weird how, I mean,
they last for a while. These vans. Pretty quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. These vans used to cost like $10.
Yeah.
And now they're like 50
yeah.
for the same fucking shoe.
Yeah.
Like, they haven't changed anything with it. It's not more comfortable.
No.
You know? I mean, come on. Yeah, that's why I haven't gotten new ones yet, because.
Yeah.
Too expensive.
No, they last a while, too.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, sure.
We're talking about our Vans, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very
That's
much.
That's right. Vans shoes.
The cheap ones. They're comfy, too. They slip on and off.
Yeah, I like them.
I like to have a shoe on, especially when I'm out walking around.
Always a benefit. Always a benefit to that. So when you guys appeared on MTV Unplugged with Nirvana, you were invited to to play some of your songs with mm-hmm. Nirvana on that.
Yeah.
Kind of basically shot you guys into the limelight almost, right?
There's definitely a lot more exposure, you know, from that. Uh-huh. New exposure, definitely. I mean, we put out quite a few records by that point and had been around quite a bit.
Had
been doing it for a minute. Hadn't really been on TV like that.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. How did that come about?
Like that.
If you don't mind me asking.
To that level. And especially considering that Nirvana at the time was pretty much the biggest fucking band in the world. You know
what
I mean?
So right.
It came about because, like you're saying, those guys, you know, liked us when they were young, you know, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, Cobain really was into the band when he was a kid, as it turns out. And once he got to the point that he got to, where he's like, you know, he could have bands out that he wanted to have out with him
right.
and kind of stuff, they invited us out to play some shows.
Yeah.
And they'd blown up by then, you know. So it was like arena gigs.
Uh-huh.
And it was just in the midst of that, you know, at some point they were getting ready to do their unplugged thing. And one night Cobain brought it up, said that he was thinking about doing some of our old stuff on the show.
Uh-huh.
And it went from there to him deciding to take us on TV and have us just play the songs, you know,
yeah.
play them with him.
And MTV didn't have a problem with it?
No, they did. Apparently, yeah.
Really?
This is like actually like a fact. I think the producer of the show has actually been interviewed about this.
Oh, no shit.
About it. Like,
I didn't know.
How Cobain said that he had a special guest, you know. And
uh-huh.
And we hadn't really been on MTV that much, you know. We'd never
yeah.
really had
yeah.
access to the, you know, to like the budgets or anything. We'd been on probably like the you know, the late night underground kind of shows that they had or something. Some of our homemade videos maybe got played once or twice here or there.
Uh-huh.
But we certainly weren't like a staple on the thing. I think maybe they were hoping for maybe some of the other, you know, big Seattle bands or something to, you know, accompany
right.
those guys. But
so he didn't say that it was you guys.
No, he did.
He did.
And he shoved us down their throats.
Oh, really?
Yeah. This is fucking cool. And as far as like being influential, I mean, it's like I said, I don't really hear, you know, the band's influence in people, you know.
Sure.
I don't see people like, you know, playing like, you know, fucking half-assed, you know, stoner country punk retard rock. You know, but maybe the attitude, you know, the kind of
sure.
that would actually turn you into the kind of artist uh-huh. who would want to take people that he dug, and,
right?
You know, and use his newfound popularity to expose those people to, you know, everybody else and whatnot.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And then to also to say, no, I'm taking these guys on TV with us, you know?
Right. Or I'm not doing it.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't think the guy probably didn't even need to get to that point. You know, at that point, you know, they definitely wanted him to do it.
Oh, sure.
And probably didn't have to push back that hard. But yeah, there was actually like some kerfluffle. You know, I mean, not even a kerfluffle, but it had to be like, you know, foot had to be put down.
Uh-huh.
I'm pretty sure it's how it went down. So.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah,
awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. Now, after that all hit, I remember hearing stories that, you know, back in the day, and we don't have to go into this if you don't feel comfortable with it, but that you had somewhat of a drug problem.
Yeah, no, I definitely
like a lot of the guys back then.
Yeah, you know, I did. I definitely managed to get myself really good and fucked up to the point that the band could no longer continue.
Uh-huh.
You know, those guys weren't willing to see me do that to myself, and I couldn't function. And
right.
And it wasn't like a lot of guys back then or whatever. It's just I don't know. I'd been around drugs my whole life, you know, done plenty of fucking
uh-huh.
drugs, you know, definitely recreationally mostly. Had, you know, dabbled with narcotics even enough and realized that, you know, you have to be careful, moderation and all
mm-hmm.
that, you know, and then, but in my mid-30s, I don't know, I just got to a point, you know, personal level, whatever the fuck, you know, and plus I had, you know, I did have more money, which is kind of a typical thing, you know, you see somebody coming
with
a little bit more money than they're used to having. Which is a shame, but it just corresponded, you know, just happened at the same time that other things were going on, so that suddenly, yeah, I wound up fucking myself up and paying a way too heavy of a price for something that I, you know, knew.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. So. And your wife ultimately lost her life to that.
Yeah. Yeah, she did.
And I'm sorry to bring that up.
It's, you know, it happened. It happened. Yeah, her name was Michelle, and it's a terrible tragedy. Any death at your own hands like that, I mean, you all got to go, but, you know, that's nothing more to be said about it other than it's just fucking, you know,
awful.
Damn shame, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So was that a, like a direct result of just being in more in the spotlight and like you said, having more money and just being, you know, somewhat, for lack of a better term, famous?
It didn't have to do so much with the fame. I mean, it, you know, just circumstances, you know, just lined up against me.
Right.
You know, I let him line up against me, you know, that's flat out. I let it happen, you know, you're fucking responsible for the fucking decisions that you make, obviously. You
sure.
know? And I let it happen, you know. It's a shame because I'm a nice enough fucking guy, you know.
You seem like a very nice guy.
You know, I like you. So my act is working.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So, and I also read that the way that you got clean is that you were sent to jail or sent to prison.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I went to jail a bunch of times and I never got clean on any of those. I got clean while I was in fucking jail, you know, cause you know, but then when I got back out, I'd start using again. But you know, the last time I went, I was locked up for, the longest time I'd been at any one chunk.
How long were you in?
It was a year and a half.
A year and a half.
Yeah. And that was enough time to, you know, I mean, there's dope in prison, but I didn't do it, you know. But
yeah.
I just, you know, managed to get to a point. And it was long enough after the passing of my wife, you know, so, you know, that I, like, kind of managed to get to the place, at least emotionally, with myself.
What year are we talking here?
This is 2003, 2004, 2005.
Uh-huh.
And I just knew I wasn't going to use when I got back out, and I didn't, you know, so.
Well, that's a tough habit to kick, man.
Yeah, you know, any habit's tough to kick. You know,
sure.
To get a hold of you, so.
Sure. Do you care to comment on why you actually were sent?
Oh, last time? I think the people know about this. It's like, not that hard. You Google it up and it comes up. I mean,
that's how I found it.
I've been to jail a bunch, and I kept having to go to jail, and I went to the post office. I was all fucked up, and me and my girlfriend, and this stupid incident in the parking lot where, I yelled at this lady and she got the security guard and I yelled at him and he felt threatened. So next thing you know, I'm like fucking beating him up and, he's trying to hit me with his baton and I took it away from him and I belted him with it a couple times and then turned around and tried to get the fuck out of there. It was at the post office. We'd just gone to the post office to mail some crap.
Yeah.
And as I turned away, then he shot me. He wound up fucking shooting me in the back.
Really?
And so, you know, but since I'd, you know, actually, you know, belted him a few times, I wound up being convicted of
assault.
Yeah. And it was at a post office, so it was a federal thing. So that time was done in a federal.
So you were hit in the back with a bullet?
Yeah.
How did that happen? I mean,
he took out his gun and shot it at me. Yeah, that's how that happened.
That's not what I meant to say. What I meant to say was, how do you recover from that? Like, did it hit anything vital?
It's actually still in there. The bullet's
really?
Still in there. It did hit something vital. It hit my fucking spine. And the bullets, I'm not sure, you know, like what numbered spine, how they have the vertebra numbered.
Sure.
It's down here. It's in my lower back.
Uh-huh.
And it's still in there because it's too precariously, like,
situated. They can't.
It's pressing up against my spinal cord, so I have some subsequent nerves.
Really?
Damage below the waist. Yeah.
Does it still hurt too?
No. Sometimes it kind of aches, and it seems like it might be the rain. You know, that makes it do that sometimes. You know, but I can't really quite tell. But no, it's nerve damage. It's more like a lack of sensation. I have some partial paralyzation and whatnot. So
really. And does that affect your playing? Did you have to relearn
a
lot of the stuff?
No, I mean, I had to relearn everything because I fucking lost my mind completely.
Right,
you know,
right.
Out of it for so long. But no, it's below the waist stuff.
Wow,
from
man.
From the bullet on down. Yeah,
so. That's insane. I mean,
this is about the last time anybody's going to get this out of me, too. I'll say that because it's happened a long time ago, you know?
It's
the fucking past. It's all tawdry, retarded shit that I allowed to happen, you know?
Uh-huh.
And I, you know, live with it every day.
Yeah. So, well, I don't want to make you uncomfortable or anything like that.
No, you can't make me uncomfortable about it. That's just a question of like drawing a line on the past and point.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
And this
has been gone over plenty of times.
Yeah.
You know? It's not like anything, you know, this ain't late breaking news or anything. You know, I've been out of prison now over 10 years. So.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And off dope over 12 years now. So.
Yeah.
They're almost 12 years, whatever the fuck it is. So,
well, I thank you for being real with me, though.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I appreciate that. So when things start getting back and rolling, what year are we talking about here when you guys reformed
Kurt, we never really broke up, you know. I mean, just made myself unavailable to be able to continue to do it. Derek, at that point, decided he didn't really want to keep going, so Kurt just went off and kept doing his thing.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
But the band was just always kind of there if I ever could get my shit together to be able to play again. And
yeah.
Finally, once I got out, I'd been out for a while, and I went and saw Elmo's band play, actually. I hadn't seen Elmo in a long time. I hadn't had any contact with anybody for a long time. And Elmo had by then grown up enough to be, you know, been playing music for a while, and was, you know, and had a band in town. I went and saw him, wound up hanging out with him, went over to where he was living at the time, shortly after that. And then he told Kurt, seems like, you know, Uncle or Chris is, you know, healthy again.
Yeah.
And Kurt was in the process of putting together another album and wanted it to be a Meat Puppets record, and just got in touch and asked me if I'd like to do it with him.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That was in the fall of 2006.
And were you itching to get back and do this again?
It was fucking amazing. You know, I mean, it was way beyond like anything I thought could possibly happen. You know, I had so completely and entirely lost everything.
Yeah.
You know, it just, I didn't even, no, I never thought, I didn't think it was something that could happen, really. I didn't know what the fuck I was going to do with myself.
Yeah.
You know, but I was tickled pink when he got in touch, I'll say that much.
Yeah, yeah. And so how are things going now, man?
Oh, they fucking stomp shitlessly. It's hilarious. You know, we put in another good amount of years and back into the same thing that we've always been about, you know, put on the fucking guitars and play some music.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And,
but do you enjoy it? I mean,
I love it.
Yeah?
I absolutely love it completely.
The love's still there.
Absolutely. It's fucking such a treat to walk out and pick up the guitar. Yeah, it really is, you know.
Yeah.
Which is cool. I mean, it's interesting, you know, for an art project to get as long-lived as this one is.
Yeah.
You know, as one of the artists involved, you get to find out what it's like to turn into an old fart and still try to fucking make some art, you know. You know, what that does to your, to the art, you know, to the music, you know, whatever, you know, to,
right,
you know, what you go through, who you are, and, you know, all of it, you know, what your body undergoes, everything, and, you know, plays into it. And it's interesting to see what, you know, goes on at this point, you know, age-wise and whatnot, and, you know, with you know, something within our project. So,
yeah, yeah.
And the only way you can do it is by having, you know, been doing it for fucking 3.5 decades like we have, in a way, you know.
Sure. And are you proud of that fact?
I mean, that's just, you know, it is what it is. You know, you see people playing and you keep playing. I mean, the blues guys all did it. Fucking, you know, just, you know, there's no reason to not do it, you know. And the rock guys, rock was such a kind of a young guy's medium, in a way, you know.
Right.
In a way. But then you just see, it's just like, yeah, you don't stay young that fucking long, you know. Years melt by pretty quickly. And
yeah, I'm feeling that right now.
You know, you just keep playing. It's just like, well, age be damned. I mean, I don't spend as much time in front of the mirror. That's for sure. If I can help it. But other than that, I'm fucking, you know, I'm the same person that I've always been in a lot of
ways. Sure. That's great, man. I like that. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with me here, buddy.
Yeah, you're welcome, Aaron. That's fun.
Yeah. And let's plug your wares here. Where can we find the podcast? Where can we follow you on Twitter or Facebook or anything
probably,
like that?
Probably. You know, I mean, it's the Chris Crickwood podcast. And, you know, yeah. So however you, it's like, so there's like SoundCloud, I know, I've heard of that.
Sure.
That's a thing, right?
Yeah.
And then,
iTunes.
Yeah, if people look around for it, I'm sure they'll be able to find it. You know,
all right.
It's only been, we've been doing it now. For about, you know, a few months. I was telling you, my friend Bill Cody talked me into doing it. It was his idea. He didn't have to really talk me into it. He had this idea, and I was like, I've done a lot of being interviewed. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I feel comfortable doing that. You know, it's easy. If somebody asks you a question, you just go, well, what do I fucking think? And then you say something, and it's just like, it's like, there, you know, are we done? You know,
I hope you didn't feel that this time.
I mean, you know, it's always like that, but it's always fun too. I mean, you know, I figured out I'm have a good time with that as well. You know?
Sure.
So I figured, sure. I mean, mostly I was just placating my friend Bill, telling him, okay, well, I'll do that. And then he actually set the fucking thing up. I was like, holy shit. No, wait, I was kidding.
Oh, shit. Now I got to go down that radio station.
So, Bill actually got the ball and, you know, rolling on the thing. And suddenly I found myself, like, you know, heading out to Los Angeles to be, you know, to start podcasting or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, doing this radio show. And, It's actually been pretty fun.
I find it insanely pleasurable.
Yeah, I'm getting a kick out of it. I mean, it started off with like people that I know,
right?
You know, like friends of mine, musical friends and whatnot. But it's already expanded out to different folks to where it's like, hey, I've never met you before, and
sure, yeah,
you know, and you know, and then just it's same kind of stuff. I mean, I'm having a good time doing it. And,
good.
You know.
Like well, we'll seek it out and we'll post a link to that.
Yeah,
and
yeah. Do you know Bill? And, are you in touch with Bill at all? Just
no.
I'll give you Bill's information, you know, and you can get in touch with him and
sure.
share this with him.
Yeah,
he'll share with whatever with you as well.
I'd appreciate
Bill's
that.
Done, he's doing a fun job with it. It's the same thing as like I was saying. It's serendipitous in a way, like getting the fucking records out, you know.
Right, right.
Managed to do this stuff, and you know, as things present themselves, you move forward through them, and, you know, and with them as long as it's like a, you know. As long as it satisfies me on a certain level, you know,
yeah.
as long as it meets
yeah,
certain criterion, you know, it has to like fucking pass my smell test or whatever, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and this definitely does.
Podcasting, the new punk rock.
It's punk rock enough. You know, you can say fuck on the radio at
yes,
least.
You can. It's so great.
Jesus Christ.
It's
so
great.
Stumbling over my goddamn sailor's mouth and you know, on the radio.
Is that always hard, man? Like really working it not to swear on the, when you're getting interviewed on the real radio?
There's you know, occasionally some funny stuff would go down with that.
Right,
stuff,
right.
You know what I mean? Or you'd fucking just say fuck and not even mean it. Or else you'd sit there and the next thing you know, you're like purposely saying fuck. See what goes down. One time I said, how about this? Fuck you, Buffalo, to this guy, this radio station guy up in Buffalo, you know? And I mean, I like Buffalo. I played up there. I got good close friends from there. You know what I mean? I was just goofing around, right?
Right, right.
And he took it and turned it into this big thing. Beep you, Buffalo. You know, so by the time I get to town, it's like I'm notorious, you know? fucking foul mouth.
Were people pissed off,
bummer.
Or did it? Was it more of a joke?
It was a. It was like a joke.
Yeah,
thing. And I went down to the station and you know, told them no, I meant fuck you in a good way. Got a chance to say fuck you again on the radio.
That's great. That's great. Well, Chris Kirkwood, thank you so much, man.
Thank
this
you.
Very, a real honor.
You're very welcome, man.
Yeah. Whoa, man, what a story. What a life story. Amazing. And super happy that he made it out the other side, right? And still making music. Still making music. God damn it. I was re-listening back to that as you were listening at home. Well, on different lines of time. You understand? Does that make sense? God, my desk is just covered in cords, and it's a perfect metaphor for my mind right now, because I can't do it. Maybe I should just stop this and re-record this whole outro thing. Maybe I should do that. I'm not gonna do that. I'm too lazy. I gotta get this done. I gotta get it done. Hey, pushing it out. You can find out more about Chris Kirkwood at the Chris Kirkwood Podcast. You can check it out on SoundCloud. Type in Chris Kirkwood Podcast into the search bar. You should come right up with it. Let's see. Right now, as of last week, they have a two-part episode with Jack Black and Kyle Gass, Tenacious D, right? That's awesome. What the fuck, man? I want them on my show. I want to get them here in the backyard. Oh, man. That was a great conversation. And Chris, if you're listening to this, thank you so much, man. Thanks for being so candid and open to that. And man, you know, sometimes it's weird doing conversations like that because you don't want to pry, but you also want to know at the same time, right? You hear about this stuff, you want to know, some of the story. And Chris was nice enough to share that with us. So wonderful, wonderful, wonderful human being. All right, we got a lot of stuff coming up. For the remainder of the month, people, and coming up in September too, a lot of good shows coming up, so keep your eyes peeled there. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, and if you do, please take a moment to rate the show. Only takes a couple seconds to give us a star rating. We're also available on the Stitcher, TuneIn, Cairo Radio apps, and now Spreaker, the Spreaker app. You can get it there too. Or just visit us at www.air-raid.net. Click on the Archives tab and check out all 263 episodes. Keep in touch by liking our Facebook page at facebook.com/theairraidpodcast. Our Twitter handle is at AirRaidNet, or email me directly at aaron@air-raid.net. And remember to take the pledge, people. Pledge to tell somebody about this show. Bring it up in conversation. Tell your friends, your mother, your sister, your brother. We'll even take your fathers, your cousins. It's good stuff, man. Here's your inspirational quote of the week, as said by a four-year-old.
Do or do not. There is no try.
All right, folks. Thank you so much for listening. Had a great time this week. And we'll see you. We'll see you on the other side. Have a good week, everybody.
Sky for me.